good morning, everybody, and welcome to this conference organised by EU Kids Online. I'm delighted to see so many people here. I'd like to welcome you also to the LSE. Several people have been surprised that we have a half-decent building to put you in, so universities are not quite falling apart yet. My name's Sonia Livingstone. I'm the director of EU Kids Online. I'll just check that those lurking in the back can hear me properly. Thank you very much. Well, today is the culmination of 3 years of work by some 70 researchers in 21 countries. And there are people here from those 21 countries and indeed from other countries. So this is a very international group, and we were thrilled that so many people were interested in the work of, in our work, and in especially the theme, the question, how are children today using the internet? What opportunities does it afford them? What risks does it also pose for them? So today the network will present the results of its 3 years' work, and other researchers here will present their findings in an afternoon session in which a number of researchers will present their latest research findings. We wanted to make this very much a research day, but also we have here stakeholders from child welfare, industry, education, government, and the purpose, of course, is that we all talk to each other and that we find the dialogue and the mutual interests and the ways of communicating that really can bring alive that notion of evidence-based policy. It's going to be a busy day. Our timetable is very full. I hope everybody has with them the timetable and also a copy of our final report, because we can only give you a snapshot of those findings here. Just so that you know that everyone with a white badge is a guest and everyone with a pink badge is a member of the EU Kids Online network. So if you have questions about the network, you could ask anybody with a pink badge. And all the sessions today are going to be in this room and a lecture theatre that way and that way, except for one session in this afternoon, which is a short walk away, and there will be people here to guide you to get over there. Sorry. EU Kids Online has been a thematic network funded by the Safer Internet Programme of the European Commission. And it aimed, as I've said here, to compare recent and ongoing empirical research across Europe relating to the theme of children, internet, all aspects of access and use, but with a particular focus on risk and safety issues. So what we've been doing, as our aims and objectives specify, is to identify and evaluate the available data, to seek to inform the research agenda, because the research agenda is unfolding fast in this field, and to identify the gaps so that it's clear where future research should focus. Perhaps the hardest task, our third aim, was to try to compare research findings across different countries. And it's for that purpose that I've put an image of the Tower of Babel, because research is published in every language that researchers work in, every language that children themselves speak. And the task then, if you can imagine, for our network is to try to synthesize the key findings and approaches and assumptions of research that's been conducted in all of those different languages. So I think we have overcome the Tower of Babel. I don't think we have a state of crisis and constant miscommunication, but certainly it is a process if one really wants to try to understand what are the similarities and what are the differences for children across these multiple countries. And we have learned a lot, but there is also, I hope, a rich story that we have told in our final report and our various other reports about those cross-national similarities and differences. To guide further researchers and to help stakeholders understand some of the constraints and structures of research, we've also produced a best practice guide for methods, and we have sought to develop policy recommendations as is necessary for that field of evidence-based policy. I think of EU Kids Online as three intersecting circles. Each of the words represents a body of thinking, a set of questions, a particular research literature, and each intersects, the point of our intersection where European issues come together with children's issues and online issues, there is a point of intersection, there are, as it were, the wider circles, and each of those circles also raises interesting border issues. And I think the border issues are something that everyone here has probably been thinking about too. So when we think about children, part of our task is to understand what's distinctive about children. How do we balance their concerns against adult rights, adult freedoms, and questions of resource? When we think about the internet, I think a question in many people's mind is what difference really does the internet make? We are all, as it were, fascinated by it and obsessed with it, and yet it is hard to establish in some ways that the internet is fundamentally transforming children's lives. So we would pose this as a question. What difference does the internet make, and how especially does it relate to offline structures, practices, and policies? And then the European aspect. Some, especially this side of the channel, wonder if the concept of Europe even holds together. In EU Kids Online, I think we are convinced that it does, but in difficult and interesting ways, and trying to understand exactly what is similar in different countries and where the differences lie, and then how also to understand Europe in relation to other countries, other continents, all poses some challenging questions. I'll show you a picture of the members of the network. You can't quite see their faces, but just to be clear, it's a large enterprise to bring together so many people. And each national team has also worked in its own country with its national research community and its national stakeholders. These days, as we know, European funding favours networks. There are several other network members here from other, also funded by the Safer Internet Programme. And by and large, these networks are not funded to collect new data. And I think it's important to understand that EU Kids Online has not been collecting new data, but it has been doing analysis, synthesis, and reflection on the data that exists. So the network is, in a sense, a collation of expertise, and we hope more than the sum of its parts. At the same time, of course, in 3 years with so many people, all kinds of things happened. People changed jobs, several babies were born, people moved around. It's been a moment, I think a significant moment in the lives of many of the people here to have been part of this project. So we have learned, I think, to work flexibly, in a collegial manner, I hope. And those of you who would like to understand how a network works, you could buttonhole somebody with a pink badge and get some stories. But what we're going to present to you today really is a result of this very collaborative process. Before we move on, I would like to just offer some clarification. Perhaps the most often we are asked about the question of what do we mean by online opportunities and what do we mean by online risks, and how can we possibly make a boundary between the two. So I thought I would just say something about this before we move on with the programme. Really to say that, of course, researchers are aware that in children's lives, the boundary between opportunities and risks is in many ways an artificial and unnecessary one. But in terms of organizing findings, in terms of making findings speak to particular stakeholder groups and particular forums, it's also a useful line to draw. We are aware, and research tells us again and again, that children and adults make this distinction differently. And yet we keep finding connections between the opportunities and the risks. We have also, in this scheme here, sought to understand the role of the child on the internet in three systematically different ways, again recognising the blurring between them. We wanted very clearly to move away from thinking of children merely as recipients of what the internet offers to them, though that remains a significant role, but also to understand how children are in some ways participants in this interactive medium online, and sometimes as actors initiating both positive and problematic encounters. So I think this scheme will always be something for us to debate, but we found it a useful structure to guide our thinking, and so I offer it to you as something to agree with, disagree with, develop, whatever. At the end of the day, one of our conclusions will be, as researchers always conclude, more research is needed. Nothing like 3 years discussing what there is to become very aware of what there isn't. But since we have often ended this with the critical, more research is needed, I'm also going to take this moment to announce that we are going to do more research. And so today is also an announcement of the launch of EU Kids Online 2. And EU Kids Online 2, unlike the project we have finished today, is going to be a very sizable data collection exercise in which we will conduct survey interviews with children and their parents in as many member states as the budget will allow, but we hope at least 20 member states. So many people here are involved also in that new project. We get going on that tomorrow. And so I would also just like to take this moment to invite people to stay in touch with the project, to check out our website to see what future findings we develop as well as those we have already produced. But so that I don't run out of time on my programme, we're going to move on. And I wanted to put EU Kids Online in the wider context of the work of the Safer Internet programme. Unfortunately, Richard Swettenham, who heads that programme, was called to Brussels yesterday. But we're very pleased that Christine Corman, who started as our project officer but has since moved upstairs, is going to say something about the Safer Internet programme, and then we will move into the presentation of our findings.
Good morning, everybody. So, as Sonia said, I'm Christine Corman. I'm working for the European Commission as the head of sector for the Safer Internet Programme. And I'm replacing today Richard Swettenham, who unfortunately couldn't come to this meeting and sent his apologies. So I will try to, replace him, hopefully. So I think the main thing that we were asked to present is to give a little bit a context of the Safer Internet program before you will actually have information on the results of the EKids Online project, but we thought it would be also interesting to explain to you in which way the Safer Internet program already uses, evidence-based approach, and hopefully will use it more with more input from research in the future. So for those of you who are not very familiar, maybe there are not so many, but still, I will just like to mention the main objectives and actions of the Safer Internet Programme. Since 1999, the European Commission has taken action to make the Internet safer through different Safer Internet Programmes, which are mainly programmes funding projects, either national or cross-European projects. And the overall objective is to protect children by promoting a safer use of the internet and other communication technologies as well. Now we have just started the Safer Internet Programme 2009-2013, to give you main ideas about what we are doing and will be doing, the four main actions concern ensuring public awareness of online risk and precautions. So it's really awareness of children themselves and people who are close to them, like parents and teachers. The second action is fighting against illegal content, and this is with a particular focus on child sexual abuse material. And also something which is new in the program is also focusing on tackling harmful contact such as cyberbullying or grooming. The third action is to promote a safer online environment, and I will come back to this and mainly through interaction with all stakeholders such as industries and NGOs, and trying to promote really a safe approach by all the stakeholders. And in this particular area, I would like also to tell you that we will not only focus on the risks, but also on the positive aspects and the opportunities, and try to promote the opportunities of the internet for children. And the fourth action, which probably is important for many of you here, is that now it has become part of the really a real action line in the program to actually fund some research. And this is called broadening the knowledge base to provide input to further policies. Now, I mean, apart from this general overview of the program, I would like to mention a few areas where we can already show how in the making of a decision on the program, we already use research and try to put research findings into action, although it's not our only source of information. So I will get a few examples in the preparation of the Self-Internet program itself, of the annual work programs, of self-regulation initiatives we're involved in, on awareness raising, and also on the knowledge base itself. So the Safer Internet program is works, I mean, as a program decision of the European Union, and it is this decision has been prepared by the Commission and then is discussed with the other voted by the other European institutions. And I'd like a little bit to explain that in the preparation of the Self-Internet program we're working in at the moment, there was an impact assessment, and in order to draft this impact assessment, there have been really two main sources of information. And one is clearly the research results which were available at the time. And for example, the Eurobarometer survey and the SAFT survey, as the SAFT research project. As well, and they in particular contributed to define the risks that the program should encompass, and the emergence, for example, of the cyberbullying really as a new risk. So it's really something that we have used to support the proposal in this program decision. However, we, we only don't only focus on research, because we are also raising consultation with stakeholders, and we have to also respond to public expectations. And for doing this, we have mainly two ways. I mean, one is to run public consultations when we invite all stakeholders to make comments and proposals to our plans, and also we organized a conference, maybe some of you are familiar with, which is called Safer Internet Forum, which took place in 2007, and which really was, its aim was really to gather input on the main actions that we should be doing in this new program, gathering also in the industries, NGOs, of course, researchers as well. For example, in the case of adding the grooming as also one of the main issues of the program, well, maybe the body of evidence concerning grooming, does not yet show really enough to put it really on the agenda. But the consultation with stakeholders and the example of the severeness of cases and the input we get from NGOs and so on, then made it an issue of sufficient importance so that we can we have to put it in the program, and then we decided to fund, as I will explain a bit later, research in grooming, so that now we can get more body of evidence of how it happens, how it can be prevented, how it all happens. So it's really this mix of research and stakeholders' input through our mechanisms of consultation, which help to shape a program like this. However, the program is quite flexible in a sense, and then we work with within this fiber program, we work with annual work programs, and as a commission, we are also preparing proposals for these annual work programs, In those work programs, we also try to gather, also stakeholders and include research results. So, for example, we have set up this year two focus groups, One on awareness raising in schools, which will be one of our topic, and one of positive content online, how we can improve positive content, positive use of internet by children, and EU Kids Online members were represented in this focus group also to tell us what research says about these things and help us shape the program in this area. Since now we have a part of the program which is about research, the results of EU Kids Online also help us to identify, I mean, with the gaps identified, what should be the areas that that should be covered, and I will tell you them a little bit later. One other area where we, I think we have used research is in the area of promoting self-regulation. As you may know, we've been quite active in the recent years to discuss with the industry and to make happen some self-regulatory agreements at European level. The first one was concerning the mobile phone sector, and the European Framework for Safe Mobile Use by Young Teenagers and Children was signed in 2007 by leading mobile phone operators. And this year, in 2009, several social networking principles for the EU were signed by major social networking operators. And in the process as well of drafting this this text, which is mainly led by the industry, but the Commission helps to bring other people around the table, and we also invited EU Kids Online to the task force to present the status of what we know and to help feed the discussion and show also share the information that that we have, and also I think this was mainly taken into account in the identification of risks and areas where there should be measures taken. Concerning, I mean, these social networking principles, we are now the Commission committed to monitor the implementation of this agreement by the industry, and we are now busy doing it, and we will publish a report by February next year, and we hope to do that as well with the help of some researchers. And finally, broadening the knowledge base. So this is the name of the action line for the new research part that we are funding. So it's a, it's really a new thing in this program. It's a dedicated activity, and it's one of our aims is really to ensure the maximum impact of activities to respond to new uses and risk and provide input for future strategies. Well, it's partially there because we knew one of the conclusions would be further research is needed. So this had been anticipated. So and now we have a space there where we can fund a bit more research. And I think already the without, I mean, and the intermediary results of the Kids Online, which have already been published concerning the gaps are already used to shape this this action line, and also I think the methodological work that has been done by the EU Kids Online network will be very useful in the we actually made it a requirement for the next research to really follow the guidelines made by EU Kids Online. So I think in this area it will be a very useful useful impact. So. Now, I would just like to turn more specifically, before I finish, to this knowledge-based side, research side. First, to say that we didn't really start from scratch. Even if we didn't have an action line in the previous programs, there has been research funding within the program, like project surveys, like MediaPro and SAFT, Eurobarometer surveys, and, of course, the EU Kids Online. And already projects that were already negotiated and will start this year concern, of course, EU Kids Online 2, that was already mentioned before. And already this year we'll start a project called POG, which is about understanding the process of online grooming, and it is an offender-related study. And how, so now what will come next? In the work program 2009, so which has just been approved and a call for proposals going to be published next week, we opened an action line for research on online grooming from the victim's perspective. And here again, I think it's one of the recommendations that to have more studies from the victims and to and the objective is really to enhance the knowledge of online related sexual abuse of children, particularly grooming, and to really identify who are the children who are more at risk and what is the process of them being victimized. And we also hope that that will really feed into a better child welfare work and awareness raising. And in 2010, we are already busy working on the work program 2010. Then it's very likely that the topic for research will be internet addiction of minors, and this is also one of the areas where it seems that there has not been so much research. And so we will want to tackle this, and it was also reported by some of our self-internet centers that we found as an emerging risk. And the focus of the study will be to what extent it's an online risk among minors in Europe and how it can be prevented, but that will be only for next year. So there is already something in preparation. So finally, I think before we go to the results, I would like really in name of I think all the people who worked in our unit with you, and as Sonia said, I was initially a project officer for this project, to congratulate Sonia and all the people, Leslie and all the network who worked on this project for their achievements. I think I must say I have not very often seen a project where the final report is printed 3 weeks before the official end of the project. really congratulations for being so timely, and of course this is not the expense of the quality, because it's also I think a high quality work and very valuable work. I think also the network we are funding networks of helplines, awareness centers, and this network of researchers is new, and I think it's also an achievement that it has become a network, and this is also very important that researchers over Europe talk to each other. And so I think they, well, for the quality of the results, I think we'll all enjoy today learning more about the results of the comparative results that the analysis of data that they did, and also the recommendation which they will present today. We will, of course, look more carefully at the detailed results, which are new, and I think that will obviously feed in the implementation of the Safer Internet program and the new work programs that we will do. And of course, we also hope that with the people who are here, part of them being projects that we fund, for example, in the area of awareness raising, that a lot of the lessons that we learn here will also be used in more targeted awareness raising strategies, and that we can really hope to achieve good results and always better results for the children, which are we should not forget, and which are really the aim at the end of the day. All these projects that we are funding is to make sure that the children have a better experience online and safer experience online. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I think it's very encouraging for researchers to learn that the results that they produce do get attended to and have some, we hope, beneficial consequences. And I hope also researchers took note that there will be future calls for research from the Commission in this field. It's clearly an expanding field with many new questions arising. I'd like now to ask my four of my colleagues from the network to come and sit at the table. We're going to try and do a fairly snappy presentation of some of the highlights of the findings for you now, And my four colleagues are going to do 10 minutes each. And if we run to time, we should have a little moment for questions at the end of their presentations and before we move into the coffee break. So if those who've just arrived want to come down and find a seat, that's I understand that getting here today has been far more difficult than we had hoped and planned when we arranged this day. And if I could have said anything about the strike, the one thing beyond my control. So my colleagues who are going to present now are Leslie Haddon, who here with me at LSE is part of the coordination team for EU Kids Online, and then also from Germany, Uwe Hasselbring from the Hans Bredow Institute in Hamburg, Katja Siegers from the Free University in Brussels, and Bojana Loeb from the University of Ljubljana. And they're each going to do a quick overview of some of the key findings in the areas of what research was available, how do we compare countries and what do we learn from that comparison, what differences do we find, and how what counts as good practice for research. So I shall turn to Leslie. Thank you.
Right. Let me explain that our starting point here was to try and find out what research exists. And some of the people who know our work don't really realise that we actually have a database where you can go and find out what research exists around Europe. It's now got 390 projects in. It's got the links to those projects where possible. And the point is, despite what language they're in, they have a summary in English about what the projects were about. So we had to assemble that first. The starting point was the report you can see over there. At that point, we had 18 countries and then 235 projects. And now it's gone up. We've expanded the number of countries and we've expanded the number of projects we have. What do you see in this map? It shows in different colours how many studies are available. So, for instance, if you're grey, like UK and Germany, it means you have a lot of studies. And what you see instantly from this, something that's not unsurprisingly, there's an uneven coverage of this area across Europe. Some countries have many more studies than others. And it's not a matter of size or population or whatever. It's just uneven. We actually have a report that we're not going to talk about today, which says, why does this happen? Why does something get researched in some countries and not others? It's quite a complicated issue, but you can get the general picture from that. What you're looking at here, we'll ignore the purple on the right, because we were collecting information about people who were under 18, and we just happened to collect a number of studies of people who are over 18 as well as part of that. The main thing to pay attention to is the height at the right-hand side. In other words, most studies are teenagers, and actually teenagers of a certain age, you know, you can see where the peak is. And you look towards the other end, and there are a few studies. Right. Part of the reason for this is, when these studies on the internet first come out, it is mainly teenagers who are using it. So it's sort of understandable, and also they're more researchable in terms of, you know, easier to get hold of them and survey them, and problems of ethics in research and so on and so on. But of course, younger and younger people are using it. And so there's a problem with this, that you need more research at the left-hand side. It's very hard to take in if you're new to this, the scope of what we're looking at here in terms of like risk. But I'll give you an example. Amongst those various risks, and this comes from theories of risk society, and we're all dealing with risks every day, and you can conceptualise certain things as being risks. We have, for instance, commercial risks. So what about the marketing of products to young children as an issue that gets under-researched? That's an example of why you need more stuff at the left-hand side. Okay, understandably, I think as well, most research on children is what you might call on the basics of what do they do. Literally, usage, access, where are they going, who are they talking to, that type of things. Okay, that means there's actually little research on the, certainly web 2.0, basically the more recent things, there's a delay in the research. It lags behind the technology, it lags behind the applications. You're starting now to see more research, for instance, on social networking sites, but it's still relatively little. You often get a question of what are children doing rather than why are they doing this, or in this case, why do children lack access? You don't get the why question researched as much as the what is happening question. These are three areas, you know, apart from looking at risk, we're looking in general at what is missing and what is available. And these are the three we picked out as being under-researched. And all those three, from our particular point of view in this conference, I would probably say it's this one. It's the research on interpretation and critique that is really necessary and would be one of our recommendations. What are you looking at here? We'll start with the N, the column on the right-hand side. More research, I think you can understand, in certain parts of Western Europe. You may be surprised by the figure for Central Europe. That's because it includes Germany, and Germany has by far the most studies. It would be much lower if you didn't take that into account. And the other point I notice about this is, although research on risks is sort of fairly evenly distributed, there tends to have been, in the past, less on conduct risks. In other words, there's much more on what are people trying to do to children, you know, and what do they access, and who's trying to contact them, rather than what the children do, which we might be worried about, their own conduct. And I'd pick out of all of that the fact that it's been slightly more researched in the Nordic countries, or Northern Europe under this classification, and we're actually speculating that more research on that might follow in the other areas. And if I were to pick a specific area, it's probably cyberbullying, which is on the rise at the moment as a conduct risk. What is important here? Look at the bottom line. This the table I showed you in the past was overall studies. This is studies of risk. It shows less on the younger children. And that's the most important thing. And after that, it becomes a little bit more even. Right, so the last three slides is where are the gaps? As I said, there's little on the why question of why children do this, that, or the other, and especially from our interest, you know, why do they do certain things that we might conceptualise as potentially problematic for one reason or another, and there's whole sets of series of why that's to be so. And actually there's little on literally what do they do when in certain situations, in other words, coping strategies. There's much more on prevalence of what activities they do rather than how they react to the situation they find themselves in. And that can be on all types of things, content or who they contact. And unfortunately, there's also little on what does it matter? You know, what's the effects? There's some material, but overall, definitely not as much as we would like on what are the consequences of certain behaviour. So let's summarise some of the general recommendations here. There's a need for more stuff on more research on younger children, on the newer platforms like mobile phone, for instance, to access the internet, on new applications, and as I've mentioned before, I think that the interpretation is one that needs following up. A lot of this research is very much done from the perspective of what do adults think is good for or bad for young children, which is, you know, fair enough, important thing. But there's actually a need to engage with children as well and get their perspective on this, which is fairly in some research. Because, you know, their agendas and what they think is happening and how they comment about what if they think this is a problem is very different from, say, their parents. The relation between online activities and offline activities. Well, we'll take just an example, cyberbullying, how does it relate to bullying? How does what you do online relate to what you do offline? Coping, I've mentioned. There is material on what parents do. Do they sit with their children? Do they talk with their children, etc., etc.? But there's very little on, and so, what happens, you know? Is that an effective strategy or not? We don't know. Although it it's in our peripheral vision here, we've mainly been concerned with children and parents. We do know that there's also very little on the role of other agencies, in this particular case, on children. The final slide obviously needs to keep doing research in this area, otherwise it gets certainly out of date and it's fast moving. Multinational research, I mean, to be honest, the comparable material we have comes from the EC research. Otherwise, a lot of the studies are really not comparable. We've tried that, we've looked at it. So more for that. Longitudinal studies, 2 out of 390, not many. Could say repeat studies, that's a bit bigger, but not many. So a need for that sort of thing. Obviously, we would say things about multiple methods, multiple theoretical perspectives. I'll just say something on the last two. Policy solutions. There's a lot of research, some of it paid for by, for instance, NGOs or governments, which does address policy. A certain amount is academics addressing academics. And sometimes, you know, there's policymakers saying, give us some feedback about what we should be doing. And so there's a need for attention to that. And years ago, before I became an academic, I trained as a teacher. And some of the things I used to write on reports are, generally good, yeah, but scope for improvement. And that's about the size of it. There's generally good, a lot of research we looked at, but there are some areas where more can be done.
Well, good morning, colleagues. I would like just to test whether I can stand up and you can hear me, even in the background. It's okay. Thank you very much. It's obviously a pleasure to try to present some about the comparative approach of this huge enterprise. I'm not sure whether it is a pleasure to do this in 10 minutes, but I will try to do so. A pluralist network as the EU Kids Online Network, pluralist in terms of culture, of professional background, of the academic discipline, needs a clear basis, needs a common ground for making cross-national comparisons. Therefore, we started with developing a common understanding of the research field. This analytical framework centers on online activities of children. In the very center, we have risks and opportunities, and as we suppose, these are influenced by access, by the kind of usage, and by attitudes and skills in a mutually reinforcing way. These processes, again, are mediated by parents, teachers, and peers, and in addition, the network, the framework includes the question whether and how age, gender, and the socio-economic status will influence these processes and relationships. All these variables and relationships are on the individual level of analysis when dealing with it. In addition, our approach included a macro level of analysis, which was used to explain similarities and differences with regard to children's online behavior. So we had to deal with two different levels of analysis in this project. So how did we compare? The comparative approach was characterized by two main steps. The first step was that national teams write country reports along a set of research questions deducted from the analytical framework I have just shown. So the first step was that there were the country teams writing country reports across all the research questions. The second step then was that some of the team, some of the network, some researchers analyzed single research questions across the country reports. So at the end, we had selective comparative texts across country reports. So this was just a rough idea. You can imagine this was in reality much more complicated than I'm pretending here in this place. As for results, I will just present two aspects. One is a very boring one, but the main point of it. How many children use online media throughout Europe? This is results of the Eurobarometer 2005 and 2008, 2005 in gray, 2008 in purple. What is the message here? Online activities of children and young people is an omnipresent phenomenon. The tendency goes to the direction that all children are involved. The second observation is this is not, so far, it's not true for all the countries in Europe. There are still substantial differences in the reach of online communication throughout Europe. There's another aspect relevant for risks and opportunities in this aspect. If we compare how many children are online and how many parents are online, there's obviously a tendency that there is a positive correlation across the countries. But the first result in this figure, Charmin, is that in opposition to some myth in the debate on the development of online media is that the parents are more likely to be online than children. So it's not the case, it's just the case of the young generation and the older generation is not online. In most of the countries, their parents are more likely to be online than their children. However, again, there are some countries where more children are online than parents, which means there is no opportunity for parents to mediate or to regulate because they don't know anything about internet use. The second point I would like to stress is the very core of the EU Kids Online is dealing with risks. This meant, because there is no real comparative study, to bring together a broad body of research, of single study, with different methodology, with different samples, and so you can imagine. So what I'm presenting now is the result of a composite judgment we made on the basis of a full body of research. The first aspect I would like to see here is a kind of ranking of risk incidents. So the most frequent cases we find is the frequent risk is giving out personal information that was reported about, if you, please excuse me, it's a rule of the thumb, these 50%. About half of the children, we get the indication that there is this problem of giving out personal information. Then you see the other risks, seeing pornography online, seeing violent or hateful content, being bullied, receiving unwanted sexual comments, and meeting an online contact offline. This is not very often, but given the high danger connected with this risk, it's an important risk. The other aspect of this is that we tried, in order to explain similarity and differences, we tried to develop a classification of countries by online use and risk. The first indicator was we used is the internet use, with low use, medium, and high use countries. This is you see in the columns. And the other aspect was low risk, medium risk, and high risk. This was obviously a complicated task to classify the countries according to these variables, but we have good arguments, I think, to do it like this. This table now shows on first sight, there is a kind of positive relation between use and risk. This is quite plausible. If there is no use, there can be no risk, in a way. This means in our short version of putting this together is northern country, high use, high risk. Southern countries, low use, low risk. And kind of Eastern European countries, we called it a new use and new risk. So coming from a very fast development of internet diffusion. So this was too short, and I could, you will believe me, talk about this for another couple of hours, but we have our 10 minutes, and so you can read everything on the EU Kids Online website.
sharing findings is one thing, but explaining the differences is another harder thing to do, and doing it in 10 minutes is nearly mission impossible. I'm facing the same problem as you were, but let's try anyway. Collecting and comparing findings on the use of the internet among 20 different countries shows that indeed all over Europe, although not at the same speed across and within countries, children and young people are gaining access to the internet very rapidly. It has been said strong variations between European countries exist in the use and the experience, opportunities and risks, as classified in the way which Sonia just showed us. As Lewis said, the rank ordering of risk experienced tends to be very similar in each country. So one of the EU Kids Online Network work packages consisted in reviewing evidences for possible contextual explanations of these cross-national differences in access, use, and risk. Four overall areas, comparative findings were identified, and this figure, which you can find in the final report you have just received, shows the different contexts that shaped children's online activities and the different levels to which they work and interact together. Four contexts that we take into account are market context, culture, family, and peer context, educational and school context, and finally the political legal context. Given the complexity of these contexts at the one hand and the large cross-national differences on the other, a country level of analysis was required to explain these differences. But cross-country comparisons appeared, it has been said several times already, appear to be a very challenging task due to the absence of national statistics, lack of research evidence, and the opacity of stakeholders in specific countries. Yet challenging tasks are there to face them. We decided to examine in detail the factors that help explain the differing likelihood of online risk experience in 20 and later on 18 different European countries. From a multi-stakeholder governance perspective, protecting children on the internet is a matter of concern of three centers of actions: government, industry, and parents. It is exactly these three centers of actions that we have been examining. Since we are dealing with a vast number of findings and data, we had to look for an appropriate methodology. Therefore, we decided to use qualitative comparative analysis, QCA, which is a technique which aims at comparing multiple cases and capture the complexity of those cases while still pursuing some level of generalization. QCA, I don't have the time to go into detail on the methodology. Bojana is much better for that, but QCA mainly usually consists of five stages. First, outcome variable, and our outcome variable is here, the degree of online risk experience is dichotomized. Second, the range of explanatory factors, which we call conditions, are hypothesized to affect the outcome variable. They are identified and then again dichotomized. Third stage entails the construction of what is a so-called truth table, which displays the list of all possible combinations of conditions. Fourth step, these combinations are systematically compared with each other and logically simplified in a second table. And finally, interpretations are made by returning to the cases. This is very roughly being explained. Given the complexity of the contextual factors shaping the risks of online risk for children, our QCA analysis was put in two stages. In the first stage, we have looked at seven more structural factors related to governmental and industrial centers of actors. There are child's use of the internet, legal framework, network readiness index, educational policy, role of internet service providers, online content provision, and race awareness. In order to operationalize these conditions, both qualitative data, the country reports, and quantitative data, Eurostat and Eurobarometer surveys, were considered. Our question was exactly what combination of specific conditions lead to a high degree of online risk. We took into account only high, for this presentation, only high online risk. We found that risk experienced in the 20 different countries show very different patterns, each country possessing its own specific configuration of factors. Expected traditional social, cultural, political, and economic divides between, for example, old or new member states do not coincide with the gap between high and non-high countries. That was our first conclusion. For our purpose, we had to dichotomize into high and non-high countries, and we have identified the 9 countries, high-risk countries, as Uwe just explained. Our QCA analysis did not uncover one explaining condition, yet some patterns can be disclosed. First of all high-risk countries have high use of the internet, except for Bulgaria and Czech Republic, but also among the 8 high-risk countries, the QCA allowed us to find some clusters. First cluster is Bulgaria and Poland. They are facing a lower use of internet amongst children, but also have no emphasis on educating them about media literacy and ICT learning. And in circumstances where there's no initiatives regarding ICT use, even a low use of internet appears to be a risky activity for children. Unexpectedly, UK and the Netherlands are considered as high-risk countries. Both of them are well aware of what internet brings in the life of their children who are heavily using the internet, and the issues are tackled from different angles. However, more children online, more informed use of the internet also brings along more challenges. A possible explanation would be that in countries where children and youngsters are advanced users, government and governance initiatives are lagging behind the rapid evolutions of ICT practices among youngsters. Estonia and Slovenia are facing a different situation. It seems to us that these countries have been investing immensely in the development of a framework, of infrastructure, even education and ICT promotion, but that the provision of content has not kept up at the same speed. This might explain why children eager to go online are faced with a lack of adapted, adequate content. Last two of the 8 countries as high-risk countries are Czech Republic. It seems that even efforts are made on the level of education and raising awareness. These efforts don't seem to be effective without the broader framework or context of regulation and, again, content. The case of Norway shows that strong efforts being done by government solely do not guarantee safety. When ISPs are passive and provision of content for children is lower, again, risk is high. So this case has learned us that high use seems to be nearly always a constant condition. Secondly, a robust legal framework does not automatically guarantee a low degree of online risk. And even when the government is taking initiatives in different spheres of action, the relative lack of provision of online content that positively meets children's needs and interests has increased the risk, whereas high provision has reduced it. So when children are eager to go online but are unable to find content tailored to their competences, they are more at risk of encountering content that is irrelevant or inappropriate. From a multi-stakeholders perspective, responsibility is, as I said, is a shared one, meaning that next to the role of government and industry, providing children's online safety is also a matter of micro-agency. That is why we decided in a second stage to explore the extent to which the varying coping strategies employed by parents, being the third center of action, work in regulating children's online behavior. In this particular exploration of the degree of online risk, we combined 2 factors from the first study, educational policy and online content provision, with 3 additional factors from the Eurobarometer Parental Survey and 1 from the special Eurobarometer study of risk issues, which is the general risk sensitivity score. The first configuration, significant for the Netherlands, yields lower ICT education efforts combined with more parents not using software to monitor or filter their children's use. These 2 factors combined explain the high degree of online risk in this country. In Czech Republic and Estonia, parents account extensively for the high degree of online risk, as parental restrictions on children's internet use are not sufficient. Discussion with children on what they are doing online is also lacking. In Slovenia, the greater online risk is explained by a higher general risk sensitivity, combined with a weak parental mediation and with more parents, again, not using any software. Poland and UK are countries with higher general risk sensitivity and a relative high internet use. And here it is confirmed again that the great number of children online, along with more skilled internet use, brings about additional challenges, even more so in combination with high risk sensitivity, despite strong parental mediation. So, the results of our second QC analysis for the 18 countries examined, so first of all, they underline the significance of parental mediation. In countries where parental mediation strategies are weak or absent, children encounter high-risk experience on the internet. As to the question, what strategy works best, this is more difficult to answer. Our results showed significant gradation in parental strategies, and the results of these strategies are difficult to predict. Country-specific and cultural differences thus become paramount. This means that there is no easy one-fits-all solution to parental mediation regarding children's online risk. So concluding, our analysis confirms that responsibility, again, is in securing safety of children, is a shared one again, for both of government, industry, and parents. And more specifically, our findings stress the importance of a strong legal framework, a strong importance of ISPs and media industry, which is a matter of governance, a strong importance indeed of education, which is about empowerment and media literacy, and last but not least, strong importance of parental mediation. And these last results confirm finally the need for cultural specific strategies. There is no European one-fits-all strategy. Thank you.
We did a lot of experimentation with lighting earlier, so I'm glad that I've not reduced us to darkness.
So, as my colleagues did previous, I will also try to tell you some methodological basis to conduct research with children in 10 minutes, even though it's going to be quite challenging. In recent years, researchers, policymakers, industry, and child protection experts and others increasingly seek empirical research to guide their understanding of children's use of online technologies. And, of course, it's really important that the data they come across is really solid and of good quality. And, therefore, we need to be aware of some methodological issues when trying to study children's experience online. So, during our project, we sort of identified many but four key areas of expertise that each researcher should possess. I will now give you here a sneak preview of those four areas, but you can, of course, read more in our publications. So the first area is general methodological issues, which are dealing with whether one wants to do qualitative research or quantitative research, or maybe to combine those two approaches. Then the second area is dealing with methodological and ethical issues, specifically dealing with in research with children. Then a whole new set of issues arise in relation to... I was trying to remind myself to go on with slides and just did have it just happens that I didn't. So the third area is issues with relation to online technologies, whether we need to apply familiar methods or we need to develop a completely new set of methods to research this domain. And last but not least, the comparative and collaborative issues are required. Methods are required to conduct research in multiple countries, of course. So let's just take a short look at all of these four areas. This table presents the general methods that are usually used in research with children. And I'm not going to go into detailed explanation of each of the methods. You can really read this in a methodological issue review. But I would just like to say that for each of these methods, tested and tried practices are available in our best practice guide as well. So the researcher can choose between survey, experiment, in-depth interviews, focus groups, fieldwork participant observation, and also more innovative and more creative methods specifically used with children. And they can also, of course, make a decision to combine these approaches, these methods, in different triangulated and complementary designs to, of course, get a more holistic and reliable results. So when we decide to do research with children, it's really important that we do research with children and not research on or about children. So in order to avoid imposing commonplace assumptions and an adult perspective that obscure children's understanding of their use of internet, it is really of vital importance to take children as an active research participants. So an active research participant rather than a passive research object. The new sociology of childhood is making really key points here to assert the agency of children. So the researcher should seek multiple ways to distance their research from the adult assumptions and to allow children to speak for themselves and be involved throughout the research process. So this child-centered approach regards children as a competent and reliable and reflexive informants in reporting their own experiences, giving them voice, and of course taking them serious, taking serious what they have to tell us. Of course, it seems much more convenient to survey parents, to interview parents, carers, teachers, educators on behalf of children. But we have to be aware that because they are adults, they don't have a greater knowledge about what children do, and they also don't know what is best for children. So even though it seems more convenient and cheaper and easier with many issues, and specifically with recruitment and ethical issues, it is really important that we are aware that we can end up with highly unreliable and misleading results when we try to depict children's experience through the eyes of an adult. So we have identified throughout the project quite some cases when the same question was posed to parents and to children, and of course the results to the same questions from two different sources were quite different. So we really try to avoid that. But of course, taking children as respondents and key informants has some serious ethical implications. So we need to make sure that children are aware at all times that they can voluntarily decide whether they wish to participate in research or not. So it's not up to their parents or up to teachers. For example, the teacher brings a pile of survey questionnaires into the classroom and children just have to fill in. We really need to obtain informed consent from children, not parents, not teachers, by providing them with really accurate information about the research, how data is going to be anonymized, how data is going to be stored, how the results are going to be disseminated. So we have to really follow these rigorous ethical standards throughout the research process. Researching online experience, children's online activities, it's also important to avoid technological determinism and approaches that focus on what effects online technologies have on children and on young people. We don't want to look at how internet influences children's lives, but we want to see how children take these online technologies, internet, mobiles, and how they place them into the center of their everyday life. What meanings do they attach to these technologies? To study this, we can employ traditional methods that we've seen before, and also new methods are being developed to effectively research new online practices like web surveys, online interviews, online focus groups, virtual ethnography, and similar. Yes? 2 minutes. Yeah, I'm getting over. So it was a lot was already said about cross-national comparative research, so just key points. We must make sure that we balance and interpret similarities and differences in finding from one nation to the next, while we avoid banalities, stereotypings, and misunderstandings. In comparative research, we need to face several really practical difficulties. For example, we need to decide which countries are we going to include and which not. We need to pay attention to linguistic, cultural differences in both the research topic and among the researchers themselves. Even though comparative research seems really demanding, it's really increasingly important because the policies are being made across Europe on national, on international, regional, and European level. So, as I said before, this was just a sneak preview from two main publications that we produced during the project. The first one was Methodological Issues Review, and the second was Best Practice Research Guide. So if you want to know more about more theoretical and methodological issues, please refer to the first one. But if you want to know more answers on concrete questions and in specific issues, for example, like how to phrase sensitive questions, how to sample children for qualitative research, how to adjust survey instrument for different age groups, refer to our best practice research guides. We there move from theory to practice. It is written in a form of frequently asked questions, and our aim was not to offer definite or absolute answers, but just to pass our understanding of the literature, best practices, hard work experiences, and of course also painful mistakes that researchers made in this kind of research. So this is just an example of the whole list of best practice research guide. You can find it on the web in PDF format and also web format. This is an example how a specific question is organized. For example, there is the what is the issue, common practice, pitfalls to avoid, and also examples from a good or bad practices. So for more resources, I would really invite you to refer to Researching Children's Experience Online Across Countries, Issues and Problems in Methodology, or to Best Practice Research Guides. But if you want to see original questionnaires or interview schedules that were used in Europe and in America in different languages, please go to our website and go to the section Methodological Resources. Thank you.
Thank all my colleagues for speaking efficiently so that we do have a little time for questions for those who would like to ask them. And we have two roving microphones here. So please.
Thank you. Is this working?
Yeah.
Shall I identify myself?
Please do.
Yeah. It's Maura Messenger-Davis, University of Ulster. Thank you very much for this incredibly valuable resource. I have a couple of questions. One is, did you take account of other media use when you were looking at children's and young people's internet use? And is there perhaps a diluting effect that we might look at if they are also reading a lot of books or listening to classical music or playing in an orchestra or whatever? In other words, the internet is not the only source of children's media use. And my second question concerns this very interesting finding that it's mainly teenagers, that this very small number of studies with young children, and everybody seems to be looking at teenagers, in which case I wonder how parental mediation works. Because in my experience, and also in my knowledge from research, teenagers don't really go in for parental mediation very much. So I'm interested in it.
Good. Thank you. Two very good questions. I don't know who would like to answer. Maybe Uwe first, and then...
I would like to say some comments to the first one. No, unfortunately, we did not systematically analyze online use in connection with the others one. But I would like to stress two points on that. One aspect was systematically analyzed, and that was, according to the Eurobarometer, how parents regulate and mediate media behavior. And what we found, amongst others, is that in some countries, parents, even parents of those children who use the internet, are more likely to regulate television than the internet. So this was one remarkable finding. The other one is just more for my personal interest. In a recent study we have done in Germany on social web and Web 2.0 use, we systematically checked to what extent patterns of social web use are related to how young children use the other media. And the main result, if I put it in a nutshell, is the existing patterns of media use, their media repertoires, stay coherent. So the new media, the online media, are integrated in existing patterns and media repertoires. It's not like there is the old repertoire and then comes a new medium and they just use the new ones. So differences that have existed before, more reading versus more action movies or something like that, they are complemented accordingly with the new tools children get.
I'll comment briefly on the age. I've done research with children on the internet myself, and I'm very sympathetic to the viewpoint that children are not into parental mediation. Actually, most of that mediation comes with the younger teens, as far as I can see. By the older teens, there's less involvement of parent. And maybe problematically, with the younger children, before being teenagers, there's less involvement because they don't see it being an issue. And maybe it has to be raised an issue for younger children going online younger and younger. But this whole general area needs more work. There's not so much on children's reactions to their parents trying to monitor what we're doing. As far as we can see, they don't like it. I don't want my parent looking at Facebook, for example. But this is the challenge we face in this next part of the project, to try to fill that gap.
We are at an interesting point of transition as well. I think in the last 5 or so years, research has been about teenagers encountering risk and the difficulties and perhaps ineffectiveness of parental mediation. But the Commission's Eurobarometer for last December shows 60% of European 6 to 10-year-olds are now online. That's a huge increase, and a very recent rapid increase in much younger children. And so I think we should look again at the possibilities for parental mediation for that age group. Another question, yes.
Hi, how's it going? My name is Greg Clark from the Anchor Youth Project. Does EU Kids Online see the possibility of research being done by actually young people themselves? Young people have a different way of looking at their lives than adults, and if so, it should be useful for young people to do the research also.
Good question. Boyana, do you want to?
Question from a young person. Should young people research each other? Yes, in fact, of course young people can't lead the research, but they should be really strongly attached and collaborated with more senior, more seasoned researchers. And for example, it's very useful to include them in the project panel to discuss each step of the research process with them, the formulating of the question, the formulation of the of the questionnaire and, for example, focus groups guidelines, then to go out and do research with them. We have to be careful that they are not too young, of course. But, for example, the concrete example from my own research at the moment that it's happening in Slovenia, people who are around 20, 25 are doing research with teenagers, and it's much more helpful because they are more open and they have more straight answers and honest answers than to some more adult researchers. So
I think that makes me way too old to be standing up here. But I will make one additional comment, which is in this field we have found a lot of enthusiasm for new ways of working online with young people, so young people working with others. But we find much fewer studies that are really being undertaken, and perhaps there are issues there about funding or about getting those findings out, because by and large we found pretty conventional use of methods. And one thing we wanted to urge in our best practice guide is to be a bit more creative and try out some new strategies.
Thank you. Good morning.
Yes.
Perhaps last question. Peter Nicken from the Netherlands Youth Institute. We're talking about parental mediation, which I think is very important, as well as for younger children as for the older children. What I've missed so far, but perhaps you did research or will research, is the mediation by the peers, especially for the teenagers, because then the parents sort of get another position, and then the peers, as we know it from research, are much more important for what they do on the internet and with other media as well.
Well, I started the presentation with the figure which is in the final report about the four contexts that are indeed setting the context for children's online use, and one of them is indeed a peer context. Indeed, in the analysis that we did, we only examined the mediating role of parents because we used there the Eurobarometer parental study, and findings on the role of peers are not there quantified. So again, it shows that this Euro Kids Online 2 research is really, really needed to go very much more in depth of these findings.
Janice Richardson, coordinator of the INSEF network. To what extent were you able to check the validity of the research, the findings that you picked up? I do realize you didn't do this research, but gathered research. But I see, for example, when in figure two in your book, the EU children online, and I see that there's a huge drop in the number of children online in 2008 compared to 2005 in Luxembourg, Belgium, and Poland, for example. And another question, I didn't quite understand when you said that Poland has low use of technology by children, as I see it in your table as one of the highest users. So could you explain this, please?
Shall I say something first, and then maybe, what do you want to?
You would like?
Yeah.
We cannot explain it. That would be the first one. It's exactly one of these figures where we really thought that our initial concerns, particularly regarding the Eurobarometer, were emphasized and were supported when we saw the 2008 data. If you particularly look at the figures for Italy, example, I cannot believe it that this should be the case. But this has a positive element, this finding. As Bojana and the work package on methodology has shown, it is unlikely that we can rely in this complex field that we can rely on just one methodology, that we can rely just on one study that tries to be comparative. I think one of the achievements of this network from my perspective is that there was a lot of learning through being confronted with a multitude of methods, a multitude of studies, and controlling each other by seeing if I once get this result and once from the same country get that result, there must be a problem that doesn't fit. And that was an ongoing result, an ongoing experience we made. So one of the results is don't rely on just one study with one sample, with one methodology. And so far, you are completely right. If we just rely on Eurobarometer, our message is do not rely just on these data. Contextualize them. That is the message.
In the research that we have considered, we applied two kinds of filters, and one was really to look at work done in the last 5 years, let's say. But even in the last 5 years, in some of the Eastern European countries, access to the internet has been fantastically rapid. And so there is sometimes a significant disjunction between the latest usage figures and the studies, for example, on risk. So we are sometimes contending with discrepancies from very rapid change. I think the more general question is that all the findings that we put into our repository met a certain level of quality control, and we put on the website what those quality criteria are.
we wanted to rule out studies where we couldn't find adequate accounts of samples or adequate accounts of measures or sufficient. There are many studies discussed among us, and particularly in policy circles, where one can't get the report behind the study, and we've been concerned not to place any weight on those. On the other hand, we were very keen not to have such high standards of inclusion that a large amount of work, particularly in some countries, would be neglected. We wanted to say, is there something we can learn from what there is in a number of countries, even though, for example, it may be coming from a doctoral thesis or master's thesis, or can we say something? And so we've been trying to balance these different criteria, but the point in a way was to say, this is what we feel reasonably sure of, this is where we think there are important suggestions that should be further researched, and this is where we find nothing at all. I think we should break for coffee, but if there's one burning question, there is one burning question in the back, so should we take that as... Oh, sorry. No, go on. Yes.
Sorry about that. I'm Vera Slavtseva-Petkova from Loughborough University. Mine is a methodological question. You mentioned the merits of the child-centered approach, but you also said at one point that the accounts you got from parents are sometimes very different from the ones you got from children. How would you explain that? Is it that children or parents are unreliable as sources, or is it that self-reports are unreliable?
Yes, well, the point is that, of course, it's ideal to gather the data from both sources, from parents and from children. But the point we really wanted to make is, for example, the Eurobarometer piece of research that has just been mentioned, it's a bit problematic because it was relied only on parents' accounts. And therefore, it's really important to take children into account as well, or primarily children, and of course then also parents, not solely parents, as it is now the mainstream still, unfortunately.
I'm going to, thank you, Brianna. I'm going to say sorry to those who want to ask other questions. There will be time in the coffee break, but we should stop and reconvene here at 11 o'clock. And if I can just thank our presenters one more time. Thank you.